The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Well, welcome everybody. Glad to be here today. So I'm in the middle of teaching a four-week course along with three other friends on the Buddhist teachings on gradual training. And so this is based on a couple of suttas. And are you aware of what the suttas are? No? And suttas is basically are the ancient text that kind of documented Buddhist teachings in some way. That's called a suttas. And a suttas, I guess the literal meaning is like a thread. And so in the ancient India, threads have kind of a special meaning. And they are ways that people sew and wave things and that connect it with your body. And they're kind of a spiritual messages that kind of gets connected with you some way. You know, since we didn't live 2,500 years ago, we don't quite know exactly what this is. But even today in India, putting threads, they call it a sutras nowadays, the Sanskrit, and in various occasions in people's life, when you see, like, hi, come on in, maybe grab a chair. And the babies would wear a thread on their legs, or and then the wrists, and sometimes even around the neck, maybe the red color. And so we don't know exactly what all these meanings are, but the suttas in our tradition kind of describes the things that are being recorded and the Buddhist teachings and their disciples' teachings. And so there's two suttas that we've been talking about, or we've been studying, related to gradual training. And so it has to do with how we gradually develop the meditative path, or develop our path that leads to full awakening. And so today, I want to pick out a few pieces in this two suttas that is related to cultivating conditions that are supportive of a meditative development. And so oftentimes, we all know that when we come to meditate, it's not so easy as just sit down and all of a sudden, you know, we become meditative. And that's quite, yeah, come join the circle if you like. You know, pull a chair closer, or, yeah. We don't have a lot of us today. And so this set of conditions include, and the first one is faith, and the next one is ethics or virtue. Next one is contentment, and then followed by that is sense restraint. Followed by that is mindful awareness, and then the next one is seclusion. And this is a whole long list. This is a whole long list of conditions that are actually supportive of meditative development. It's after all of this that the Buddha talked about one goes to sit down and meditate, develop samadhi, which is concentration practice, as well as insight practice. And so it's this long list that we're cultivating that will support us to become meditative. And so today I wanted to kind of maybe just unpack this a little bit to talk about each of this element. The first one, faith. Faith is one of the five spiritual qualities or spiritual faculties that is to be cultivated in the Dharma path. And it's probably not very hard to understand. One has to have some sort of trust of the teachings, the methods, in order to begin in some way. Right? Now you may not have a complete trust, but you kind of have some trust, have some faith that you come into the Dharma door. And for different individuals, and there may be different people with the different degrees of faith and trust. In the sutta, it talked about several different kinds of people as well who encountered Buddha's teachings and the Buddha. And the one person seems like someone who's very logical and intellectual. He really kind of wanted to understand, analyze it. And so he saw all those different kinds of people who are talented, intelligent, high status, and they went to follow the Buddha. And so he said, well, there must be something, right? And so I'm going to follow this as well. And so that's his faith, and it's kind of based on his intellectual analysis. And then this other person who simply heard this person talking like this way, and then he began to chant homage to the Buddha. And so to me, that there's that sense emotional or devotional aspect of the faith. And so this other person expressed the faith with more of the emotional and the devotional capacity. And so the faith doesn't necessarily have to be one kind, but it's necessary for us to take the step on the path. And so as one began to practice the Dharma, practice what's being taught, makes the effort, faith, the capacity, and this particular spiritual faculty will gradually mature as well, because one may begin to gain some form of well-being through meditative development. You know, maybe feel a sense of ease, some peace in one's overall being. And when that happens, this faith is said to be a form of verified faith, because this is something that one began to experience for themselves. Oh, this path brings some form of well-being in me. And so now that faith becomes kind of confirmed by your own experience. And so as a result, this faith transforms from maybe initial the intellectual, emotional understanding or relationship to that of lived experience in them. And so that's the progression as one go through or cultivating this path. And so that's the first factor that kind of support the meditative development. And once one have a faith, the second element in the suttas are related to ethical development, so ethics. There are several categories of ethics, and one of this, in the Pali terms, the ancient language that describes this, is called hiri and otapa. And hiri and otapa really means or relates to moral conscience or fear of wrongdoing. And that's quite important, because imagine if one doesn't have some sort of a moral conscience, some compass within, you could be doing a lot of bad things without really any, without any fear that this is going to have certain kind of consequence in us. And so this is one aspect that's quite important. There are other kind of translations of these two terms, but I liked the associations of these two aspects of ethical dimension. And they are sometimes called the guardians of the world, guardians of the heart. And they kind of guard our heart, and they're guarding our overall behavior in the world. And our teacher here in the center, Gil Frunstall, in one of his articles, and describe the Hari and Otapa in this way. Hari is a wholesome reaction to any harmful motivations and psychological states that appear within us. It's a wholesome reaction to any harmful motivations. And so it's really like, I don't want to do this. And you can see, I have a young child, and even for young children, they know somehow, even when they're very young, if they lie, it's not a good thing. You know, there is that kind of moral conscience within them. And then that's really a guardian for them, you know, not to do this. And otapa is a wholesome concern for any harm we may cause others. And in one of the commentaries, they associate Hari with respect for oneself and otapa as a respect to others. And so it's really protecting ourselves and protect others. And the other aspects of the ethics, has to do with the precepts. When we talk about precepts, sometimes the people right away think about rules of, you know, bonding ourselves, not doing this, not doing that. But that's really not what the spirit of precepts is about. Precepts has to do with the fact that simply not engaging in activities that lead to one's own harm and others. And that's really what the spirit of that is about. Like not killing, not stealing, not saying things that are untrue, or gossip, or wrong speech. And that's kind of what this aspect of it is. And not engaging in sexual misconduct, and not taking toxins that, with children we say, make us stupid, or make us basically unclear, and under which that we may do a lot of things that are harmful for oneself and for others. And so precepts really has to do with engaging in activities that do not lead to harm in any form. And the opposite of this is also cultivating things that will support our overall well-being. And so, for example, practicing loving kindness, practicing generosity. And those are the other dimensions of ethical development, ethical conduct. And why this is very important is that when we begin to sit, meditate, we'll very quickly know if we've done something not quite right. They show up in our meditation. And they may cause us very restless. They may cause us to kind of analyze, defend, and protect, a regret. All of those things are kind of like dynamics that pull us away from becoming meditative, simply because we've done something that weren't quite supportive of a meditative development. And when we are, when we have this inner moral compass that we know our behavior has been aligned with much more pure kind of dimension, and we won't have regret. We can sit down without having to worry about other people blaming me, or someone might come and find out, and none of those. And our heart becomes very easily settled. And so that's why this is a big dimension and to cultivate in support of our meditation practice. And the next category is called contentment. In the sutta, it talked about some specific aspects of this, like moderate in eating and being wakeful. And so, I have to say, I cook a lot of meals for the house and for my family, and eating is a big part of our life. And it's so easy to not be moderate in eating, right? And we have all those cravings and the taste, the look, and the smell. It can really pull us. And when that happens, this big part of our life pulling us one way or another, it's hard to become content. It's hard enough when you're hungry, you sit, it's hard to eat, to sit. And let alone then you have all these things you wanted to eat and, to smell and to drink. And it's really difficult to allow ourselves to settle. And the other big component around contentment, it has to do with allow ourselves to live a very simple and easily satisfiable life. Now, if our life is quite complicated, filled with all kinds of activities, got to go for a movie, go for parties, and this activity, that activity, shopping and lots of things, then it's very difficult for us to feel easy, at peace when we sit. Even without it, without all of those activities, life already feels like there's a lot of demand. Maybe the body is not quite at ease and we have to attend to that. And maybe we have to keep ourselves warm or not too hot. And there are already a lot of this kind of things going on in our lives. And even adding more, it really can get our lives very complicated. A few weeks ago, we have a monastic from Australia, Bhante Sujato, was here. And he showed us when he was here, said he lives in Australia. He's been traveling around the world, giving teachings and visiting different monasteries. And so he came with only a few things, which is his entire possession. And he has this one little tiny bag. It's probably as big as the one that I have behind me. It has some extra rope that he carry. He's wearing one. And he has an alms food bowl, which is basically the alms food begging bowl that he carries around. And he has a laptop nowadays. I guess we all needed that. That becomes one of the requisites. But that's his basically entire possession. How light is that? And it's very easily satisfiable. He's not worried about going shopping and getting this, getting that. He just carries this few things along with him. And then that's a, you know, that create a kind of a different dynamic in oneself. You can become easily settled in any place you come in. Yeah. And so contentment, that's another aspect that'll be supportive of our meditation practice. I found this quote by an Indian guru, Sadhguru, recently. I thought it's really kind of related to this dimension as well. And so he says, "It is important to simplify the material aspect of your life so that the deeper dimension of who you are can find expression." That's so true. When I read this, our material, mental, relational aspects of life, when they're complicated, tangled, and compact, it's really difficult for other dimensions of our life to be seen, you know, to be visible. There's no room for us to really explore those. And so that is contentment. And along the lines of contentment, simplification, is the next condition, which classically it's termed as sense restraint. And sense restraint, some people can also feel like, you know, a bit of aversion about it. Kind of a shutting the sense doors as if. But this is not quite what this is pointing towards. And so I'm going to read this part of the sutta to see what this training is really about. And so the sutta said, "You should train yourself like this. We will restrain our sense doors. When we see a sight with our eyes, we won't get caught up in the features and the details. If the faculty of sight were left unrestrained, bad, unskillful quality of desire and aversion would become overwhelming. For this reason, we will practice restraint. We will protect the faculty of sight, and we will achieve its restraint." And so like this, when we hear a sound with our ears, when we smell an odor with our nose, when we taste a flavor with our tongue, when we feel a touch with our body, when we know a thought with our mind, we won't get caught up in the features and the details. If the faculty of a mind were left unrestrained, bad, unskillful quality of desire and aversion would become overwhelming. For this reason, we will practice restraint. We will protect the faculty of a mind, and we will achieve its restraint." And so here, it didn't say anything about not seeing this, not seeing that. But rather, it's talking about not getting caught up in the features and the details of the things. And so if we reflect upon this, when we see certain things and when we hear a certain sound, our mind is so easily transform into something I like, something I don't like, and all of a sudden we get into a big story. You can hear a sound of a car. But maybe right away, you get caught up, whether it's a Maserati or whether it's Tesla. Oh, maybe, you know, I think I should have checked those things out, and because, you know, that probably is a good energy efficient way of living, and I should go. And so it's so easy when we hear a sound, smell an odor, all of a sudden our mind will grip on, the term says, the features and details, but it's really our projection and our construction of it based on our own inner aversion or desires. And all of a sudden, we get overwhelmed by all of the stories that come along. You might see a certain person, and all of a sudden, oh, she really needs to have a haircut. I think a shorter hair would really fit. I don't think he has long enough hair. I'd rather have him have a longer, wavy hair. You know, we have all these tendencies within us. That way, when we see a particular sight, we get entangled and complicated with all of the details that it sees. Not necessarily details as is, but rather the stories that we tell ourselves, because maybe I have some fear or some grasping about the hair, or maybe I have certain relationship to it, and then all of a sudden it becomes complicated. And so sense restraint, to me, is not that easy to do. We have to pay a lot of attention to how our mind works and to really see, wow, the mind is becoming complicated now. It's complicating based on simple sight or a simple sound, a smell, a touch. But when we really pay attention to all of these activities that are happening at our sense doors, it allows us to begin to see this very clearly and to see the consequence of it that really is not supportive of our overall well-being. And so sense restraint is not necessarily to kind of box ourselves up in not seeing anything or not hearing anything, but rather to really pay attention to what is happening at the sense contact. And then see if there's a way to let go of all the stories that we build up. And the next one that's following along has to do with cultivating full awareness in all activities in the daily life. And so that's already kind of related to our sense restraint, which is to pay attention to what is happening. But here, it is more explicit in the sutta. The full awareness in all activities in our daily life. So we don't have to wait until we sit on the chair or sit on the cushion to meditate, to be mindful. But rather, we engage with the full awareness when we're eating, when we're walking, when we're standing. Basically, we live our life throughout the day with full awareness. And so it's so easy nowadays that, you know, we eat with a big screen or small screen right in front of us. And not really giving our attention to the precious food right in front of us. And so the instruction in the sutta is quite simple and quite straightforward. Mindful you walk, mindful you sit, mindful you lay down, mindful with all those activities, you know, using toilet, mindful. Mindful chopping vegetables and mindful typing on your computer and mindful when you speak. It might seem totally impossible, but it's also very simple. It's just whenever you remember, oh, at this moment, if I remember to be mindful, it can happen right now. It doesn't really matter how many times we lost our mind, being our thoughts and stories, but as soon as you remember, it can happen right now. And so the last one in this whole list is the seclusion. And so seclusion is a following all of these activities that one has a faith coming to practice. One is a virtuous and living a simple, uncomplicated life. And one guards the sense doors, and being mindful in daily life activities. And with all of that, it becomes natural for one to find a secluded environment like this. Not in the middle of a coffee shop or a shopping mall, right? But find a place where it's conducive to meditative practice. And oftentimes in the sutta, you see this kind of phrase that's repeatedly being said. Frequent a secluded lodging, a wilderness, the root of a tree, a hill, a ravine, a mountain cave, a charnel ground, a forest, the open air, a heap of straw. And those are some examples of a secluded place where you can sit down and meditate. And so a center like this, how to say, qualifies, a secluded place. And so with all of those conditions are set in place, for us could be a quiet corner of our house or backyard, front yard, or a park, and find a time where you're not feeling so busy and occupied. And those are seclusion, secluded conditions. And when all of those come together, it becomes very natural for us to sit down and become meditative. Mind can become easily collected. And so to summarize, these two suttas kind of painted a picture of this overall climate within us that is being cultivated for us to engage in a meditative practice. And those are the conditions of faith, virtue, contentment, sense restraint, awareness in daily lives, and the seclusion. It's kind of developing an inner atmosphere that is really supportive for our spiritual growth. And so may we cultivate the inner climate change that's supportive for our practice. So that's all I have to say. Now I'm going to, open it up for any of you who would like to make a comment or ask a question.
It's a lot to take
in. Yeah.
To cultivate each of those qualities, isn't there a whole process that you have to go through?
Yeah, each of them, this itself is a process, each of them takes, us making effort to cultivate and develop this, but it's all one step at a time, a little bit at a time, and over time, we'll begin to see the benefits and have that shifting in ourselves.
So I don't know, but so would you then have a set of sessions just to address that specific focus? Like, let's say you're dealing with ethics from a Buddhist perspective. Mm-hmm. There must be books and books, right?
Sure, yeah, we could. Yes.
In other religious spiritual traditions, it's,
Each of them is quite rich, but I would say they're all connected as well. So when you cultivate one, when you begin to develop full awareness in your daily activities, you begin to see the impact of unethical behavior, and you will know that. And this, in some ways, you will automatically be changed, even if you're not intentionally doing it. And so in a way, all of this are connected as well. And so one need not to be kind of overwhelmed by kind of the richness, the depth of all of this. But if you just give yourself over to even one of them, it really opens the doors for all of them. So, for example, cultivating faith and the devotional aspect of our being. When we begin to cultivate that, we'll begin to have a lot of respect and to oneself and others. And we'll begin to let go a lot of our own agendas and concerns. Because devotion has this quality of devoid of self-concerns. Because if you're always kind of thinking from your own perspective, I want to do this way, you're not going to become devotional. But if you're really devotional, you have to let go of a lot of yourself, a lot of your self-concerns. And when that happens, the world of awareness will come in, the world of kindness will come in, even if you didn't intentionally cultivate compassion or loving-kindness. Other thoughts?
Savor the flavor, be mindful of it, and enjoy it. So, would there be, more aspects of that are not desirable?
So this is where the awareness comes in. So there can be wholesome joy and happiness that comes when we take a bite of our food, right? And it can be the gratitude that comes in. And those are supportive of our well-being, because our heart is not becoming contracted. But there can be other kind of qualities when you take a bite of apple. You know, if it's a little sour, you might have aversion. I'm not going to go to this store anymore. And they're selling sour apples. And so that can come in, and if we become aware of where and how we might contract or how we might open up, then we will know what might support us and what is not. And so in this in this sutta, in Buddhist teachings in general, the sense restraint is a restraint from being overwhelmed by our aversion and our desires. But if we have this wholesome quality of being grateful, are really happy with this bite nourishing the body, that's great, because it's support of our well-being. Yeah, thank you. I have maybe one more question, if there is one, or comment.
Mm-hmm. Aware of in all aspects, and not only sitting down, but also in the daily life.
Yeah.
Be aware. Be aware of all the things that you have mentioned, and what are my aversions?
Yeah.
What are the things that I grasp?
Mm-hmm.
And what are my delusions?
Mm-hmm.
So. It is very difficult to first do the rules and then become aware.
Yeah.
You have to be aware in order to follow the rules.
Right.
And in fact, what is unsettling is that they are rules, which I have never heard before in that sense.
Yeah.
So, and within the rules there's many aspects. For example, the moral compass. Where you're mentioning that there is the nature of human beings is to have their inner moral compass. That's the nature. The morality is there. Which begs the question also, for me, is that if in the Dhammapada, translation that Gil Francis made.
Mm-hmm.
The first verse of Dhammapada is, and I don't remember it by heart, but it says that everything is preceded by mind, it is led by mind,
yes.
And is made by mind.
Yes.
So aren't that inner moral compass also made by mind? And led by mind. So what is really innate in the human being? That's more of a general question that I have. Because kindness and compassion, as well as happiness, is it innate in the human mind? But that's a different thing, human specific. But that's independent. So what is unsettling is those rules. It's set as rules and as preconditions in order to be able to sit.
Mm-hmm.
When the way that I practice is to sit and to be aware in the everyday life or to become in that awareness, pay attention.
Right.
To become aware.
Yeah.
Of my greeds, my aversions, and my delusions.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It's just a thought.
Yeah.
That I have to process more than answering, because mm-hmm. I guess it would take days and days.
Right. Yeah.
So it's just a thought.
Sure. Well, thank you for sharing that thought. And if I didn't kind of articulate it clearly, this teaching is certainly not about rules. In certain ways, you can also see that the moral virtuous behavior is an expression when one began to practice the path. And so it's absolutely true. A lot of people come in with meditation practice, and then through meditation practice, one become aware of what is happening in one's daily life activities and begin to have that kind of sensitivity to what is supportive, what is not supportive. And ultimately, all of this are supportive of overall well-being when we cultivate properly. Now, so they're not a linear progression. You know, all of these elements kind of work for each other, support each other. And so awareness will support our moral behavior activities and will also evoke some sense of a faith. And so one doesn't have to hold it as a ruse, but rather kind of see for yourself. Awareness is a big part of this, whether it's sitting or whether it's standing or whether it's walking. And this is really the key guidance for us to see what is really working and not. I'm conscious that we're over, so I'm going to stop right now, but I'd be happy to kind of just hang around and chat if you'd like to talk more. Okay? All right. Thank you.